This is The Biz of Wealth. Challenges, rumblings, and evolution of the wealth management industry.
Welcome to The Business of Wealth. Today I had a lot of fun speaking with Lorenzo Del Sopo, who's a New York attorney with 20 years of regulatory compliance, risk management, and legal experience. In his consulting practice, he advises law firms, financial institutions, and fintech startups on a broad spectrum of compliance and regulatory matters. He's a speaker, organizer, and moderator of numerous international conferences and lectures at university seminars. He developed compliance manuals, training materials, implemented compliance monitoring systems, and interfaced state and federal regulators in numerous examinations. He speaks 5 languages and is very active in the compliance community as a director of the South Florida chapter of ACAMS, a board member of the Governmental Blockchain Association, Miami chapter, and a member of the advisory board of the Anti-Money Laundering and Financial Crime Institute of St. Thomas University. We talked about everything from startups to blockchain and what comes ahead. So please enjoy. Lorenzo, welcome to Business of Wealth. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me here, Ale.
So we met on another webinar, actually, but I wanted to hear more about your background. You know, I always ask, what got you here and what's here for you?
Okay, where is my here? Here, what I'm doing right now, and I think is... It's the most exciting thing that I could do in my life is taking care of startups. I take the startups and I realize their dream. I like entrepreneurs. They come to me with an idea and I just create the strategy to actually make it real. You know, I like those kind of people that they have a market. They have a certain kind of individual that they want to target. They have a niche and they want to create a business to serve that niche. How I got there? I got there through banking, money transmitters. I'm actually an attorney. Shh, don't tell anybody. And I started about 25 years ago to service multiple clients. In reality, 25 years ago, my first client was the European Union, because I was working on the unification of the Eurozone. That's actually was when the Euro was cool, you know?
Remember that? I do.
I was part of those teams that went from the various countries to Strasbourg. And in Strasbourg, they were trying to unify the whole European Union. And it's we loved it. I was working on the international money transaction. That's why when I moved to the States, I said, what do I know? What I can use it as? I had a lot of expertise in the area of particularly migrant workers, the effect of money transmittance for migrant workers. At the time, you know, was a big thing, was a northbound transaction from Africa to the European Union and vice versa. So it was very destabilizing, particularly the new immigrants that were sending money back to Africa. So I kind of reproduced the same thing when I tried to follow that path here in the States.
And so why did you come to the States?
Why? I went to study at the University of Miami. And then, you know, it's you fall in love with Miami. And
you did? Did you fall in love immediately with Miami?
Oh, yes. I perfectly remember the day that I was there with my glass of wine and the round trip ticket. And I said, you know what? Screw it. And it was like that, and I decided to stay after I was already an attorney before, and I was taking my master degree, and then, you know, I started working for various financial institutions. I was in a bank for 10 years, and after that I started my own practice. And for the last over 5 years now, I've been services mainly startups. I also service banks and a more established companies. Let's say that there are like three
startups
stages.
Startups are more fun, right?
Infancy. Oh, yes. You have the infancy stages. You have like the teenage years, the hypergrowth stage. And then you have the more, you know, the adult life of the financial institution. And I try to serve the three of them. But, you know, I have teenage kids, so my propensity is to adopt.
Right, to adopt new ones.
Exactly. I adopt new ones. And that's practically also what happened, because I have to say, like a lot of the relationship with my clients, they kind of expand, and they are all mainly long-term relationship. They evolve in other aspects, where they evolve with other businesses under other undertaking. And,
well, that's and super rewarding, right, to see them grow. That is super important to see them grow.
Oh, yes. That is the most exciting thing, particularly because at the beginning, everything is easy. Everything, you have this great idea, and this idea is not really challenged by reality. And so everybody is excited. Everybody's going to change the world. Everybody's going to be the new Uber of something. It's always the new Uber of something, or the Facebook of something. Okay. But then when the real challenges comes in, that usually it happens with the market. When you face the market, when you actually have to sell what you built and you really love it so much and your idea was so perfect, but the other people, the people that is supposed to pay, you know, for to get the service, they don't think it's so perfect for them. That's why I say, I think in our day and time, it's more exciting for me when I have people that they don't come in and they say, oh, we're going to build it, and the customer, they're going to come. You know, it's like a field of dreams. As the field of dreams does not happen. They are not going to come if you build it. It's you have to have a strategy afterwards. So I usually like more when it's I have a particular target client. And I know that this target client has not been served correctly, appropriately, by the current financial environment. That is one of the reasons why I start to work in the blockchain space. Because like what happened is in the fintech in general, I like to call it like in the fintech space, because banks, they've been, particularly in the last 15 years, they start like offering a really wide range of services. They start buying other companies to add services. Think about, you know, Merrill Lynch and Bank of America. Bank of America and Merrill Lynch, they couldn't be more different, but they integrated to provide certain kind of services. and so you ended up having this behemoth, these huge companies that they do things kind of okay. Instead, with the fintech, they know one thing. They don't have the weight of the legacy system that, you know, on their shoulder. And they can do that thing so damn right. And that's where you see the success.
But let's go into blockchain. So, because you've been, you know, you've worked with several startups in the blockchain space, and you know, what is this to you? What is the blockchain revolution to you?
It's like what the internet was for sales, mm-hmm. like online sales. Imagine how our life, particularly during pandemic, changed thanks to online sales.
Think about internet took how many years to take off? 10 years?
Oh, it took more than 10 years. Yeah. About 20 to really reach a certain kind of stage of maturity, and still is kind of mature.
How long is going to take for blockchain to mature and be the internet of money, let's say, or the internet of transactions?
I see it a little bit differently. Like it's the way that that the money are managed, like as a storage of data. Like I was using the concept of without the internet, we couldn't have blockchain without internet, of course. However, I see it I see blockchain mainly as a tool, something that is, it's a tool to achieve a certain set of results, certain kind of goals that are very, very wide open. Particularly, you know, I have a certain kind of approach to blockchain that is very, it's not really limited only to cryptocurrency. Like a cryptocurrency per se and the wealth per se is just as an aspect of it. It just works very well. However, there are like millions of other things that could work even better. That is my opinion. And this is like the kind of direction that I aim towards.
Keep going.
Like that I, yes, I have more propensity towards like projects that they are more infrastructural, that are based on the infrastructure of what is the blockchain. And also not only blockchain, I use generally I use wider kind of terminology. I prefer to use like DLTs, decentralized ledger technology, that is like broader and encompass like so blockchain.
It's all about the structure, basically. That's what you mean. And so about the
rest. It's about the infrastructure.
Yeah.
Exactly. It's at the end of the day, it's how you store data and how you transmit those data.
Right. You mentioned the other day that wealth managers are irrelevant in this phase of blockchain. Why is that?
But because it goes really, what I'm seeing right now, you know, you came to my office and we have the TV and you see CNN, Fox News, CNBC, and you see that is like all this wealth manager that they talk about the blockchain and they talk about the cryptocurrency, and you look at them and say, what are you doing there? Like, why do you even matter? That was created to get rid of you. Do you understand that you are the problem? That if somebody want to get rid of you, that's probably you are not doing things really right, okay? And we are seeing it. Look what happened. What has been happening in the last 6 months? This has been like the craziest thing ever. Everybody gets into, cryptocurrency, Bitcoin is going up. Bitcoin, $50,000, $60,000. Yeah, everybody, right? Everybody in what man? Gonna create a fund to invest in Bitcoin, blah, blah, blah. And then suddenly, Bitcoin from 60 go to 30. And now, you know, people crying in the street, everything, like my life has been destroyed. And it's like, are you kidding me? You are using something in the wrong way. That's not the concept. First, you don't give your money to somebody to invest into that, okay? In this case. Of course, it depends on how much knowledge you may have about this space. However, when you do it, you should do it in the long terms, because if you don't invest in the long terms, you're always affected in the volatility. Here you have an asset that it was, I can tell you, it was at the end of 2019, was at $7,500, okay? At the end of 2020, it was $25,000 value, more or less, you know, give it or take. And then it went up to $60,000. Of course, it went down to 30. However, if you see it in the long run, the appreciation that had only in 1 year, let's consider 2020, it went up like 300%. So
let me stop you there. That is exactly the same philosophy that all portfolio managers talk about when they say, if you're not an expert, invest in the long run in the stock market. Like invest in the long run. It's exactly the same.
Bitcoin per se was not created for that purpose. That Bitcoin was created as a showcase to represent a currency, money. However, the technology, this is the first use case. Imagine this is ancient. It's really Bitcoin per se, it's ancient. However, is the first one and the one that like spread up the most. And now it represents probably two-thirds of the assets of the market value in the cryptocurrency space. It's actually a Bitcoin. However, it's just a use case. And the people start using it as a storage of value, only because of one reason, because everybody knows that is a finite number. There are only going to be 21 million Bitcoin out there in the market. So it's going to be pretty much as a short run. And they know, like, since when you, it's purely, you know, supply and demand.
Supply and demand. So
exactly. But that was not the concept.
Right. No, they're using it as an investment tool when it was never an investment tool. It's just a transactional tool. So
exactly.
But let's go back to what you were saying. What are asset managers doing wrong?
Well, the whole concept is like this wasn't a design for people like this. This was designed specifically to eliminate the middleman. Blockchain has been designed to eliminate the middleman, to solve a big issue that currently in the let's say a financial transaction, I say, yeah, I can transact online. I have Venmo. I can send you money through Venmo. I can send you a wire transfer. And I say, yes, but you always need the middleman. You need an intermediary in the middle. Why? Because you have to transfer value. And let's say that I say, it's like, let's say that I have $10. If I take a picture of these $10 and I send those $10 to you, you can get it and you can make a copy of this, like if I send it by email. So if there were $10, if you split it in two, you make two copies, you have a $10 that is worth $5 because, and so on. So they practically Bitcoin came in to solve the biggest issue of having something that is distributed in between all the parties. Everybody this piece of information is public. Everybody can actually see this, can see that particular Bitcoin is owned by somebody in all these like little trenches, you know, little pieces. So the greatest innovation here was that it couldn't be duplicated, because it's like at the end of the day, Bitcoin, it's like a Google sheet. Think about a Google sheet on steroids. You have that sheet where you have the name of all the person that they owned that Bitcoin since the beginning since the day that Bitcoin was mined, and everybody can look at that. You know, you can look at that and verify who is actually the one that owns it in a very simplified.
That's part of the conversation we were having, how really private are the investors on blockchain. And they really
Private.
It's not
that's really the private. Whole point. It is not private. Everybody talks about Bitcoin is anonymous. It's not anonymous, it's pseudonymous. That's it. Like you can in reality. Okay, if I'm on this computer, I go there, I pull out a tool that like it's public, and I can check like a who owns what. I can figure out wallets that they have, like, because it's a ledger and it's a public ledger. If you know the wallet code, the wallet number of someone, you can actually go and check exactly how much they have, how much actually they own. And you can see all this movement. And that became all public because of like recently what happened with the Colonial Pipeline, you know, and the Colonial Pipeline that the ransomware, like they locked down, they paid a ransom to reopen, to reactivate the pipeline, and they paid in Bitcoin. And they say, why they paid in Bitcoin? Because if they paid in cash, that money disappeared. Instead, if you pay in Bitcoin, they were able to what? To track it down and get it back. They see that.
Amazing. So you are a lawyer and you're in compliance.
Correct.
What are, you know, regulators in financial services are always late. How late are they in blockchain, and how, you know, what are they getting right? What are they getting wrong? Where are they?
That's a very good question. And I have my opinion.
That's what I want.
And I have my opinion. Okay. What we have seen, particularly at the state level, let's talk for a second in the US, because this is very different like if we see it in a larger scale, because there are different kind of approach according to different countries. Like we can talk about China, we can talk about the country of Europe, but big change happened actually a couple of years ago. May of 2 years ago, with the FATFA, the Financial Action Task Force, who made, they practically revamped a very old rule called the travel rule. The travel rule is something that has been, like here in the state, has been implemented in the state, been for probably, 30 years? The travel rule says that an information of the customer of all transaction above $3,000 should travel with the transaction. That means that you should know the financial institution that generate the transaction, the financial institution that is receiving, with the name of the name information of the sender and the name information of the beneficiary. Something very simple. That's when you send. In reality, think about in the blockchain, in the crypto space, you don't really send value, you record it, the value. It doesn't go horizontally, it goes vertically. So this is like additional metadata, practically, that should attach to the transaction. Plus, what if there are transactions that are performed directly in between the people without using the middleman? You know, to send a wire transfer, I need to pass through the Federal Reserve Bank of Atlanta. I have to go to a bank that has to be a member bank, member with the
for people. This is in this case we're talking about private companies, but let's talk, if you talk about blockchain, how you are gonna identify criminals to protect?
The funny thing is, like, this is the problem, but it's also the reason why like blockchain and the cryptocurrency are having so much success. Because, and why fintechs, they are having so much success compared to the traditional banking. Why? And because if you work in my space, you will understand that one of the biggest risk for a company, for a financial institution, it's actually consumer protection law. The consumer protection law are leveraged by scammers every single day, every single day. All my clients, if you ask what is their biggest risk and liability, it is consumer protection law, because they do not protect actually the financial institution. And if you are a startup, it's a big problem, because if you are a very well-established bank and you have a bunch of products, you don't care that much. But you are, if you actually are the new kid on the block, the newcomer that has a great technology, however, you've been killed by consumer protection. Well, that's different. You understand, you are killing an healthy competition. I think we moved in a certain kind of direction that didn't take too much into account the needs also of the business. And this is like, it's very simple. How many, if you see in every company, like a new company, that they have to use to actually leverage a financial institution, because let's say to fund an account, they need an ACH. They have to be processed, these ACHs. Okay, you process the ACH, you fund the account. You are a financial institution, you are super good, immediately you transfer the money to somebody else. What happened? The scammer used consumer protection regulation to practically return that recall, say that is like that funding wire transfer, that the funding, sorry, not wire transfer, the funding ACH was actually actually something that was unauthorized, and so the ACH is returned. They defund the account, but the money are already out, and this represents a loss for the financial institution, the little startup that was trying to do business. That's why all the scammers, they are targeting specifically startups. This is the biggest liability that have in the market, and that's why I help build system to protect this particular space that is currently victim of those, the particular safeguards for the customers that instead are used by crooks and scammers to take advantage of.
So basically, we're looking at a world that is moving trust from government into the community.
Trust in the government? What does it mean?
Regulated by the government, with rules dictated. Yes. Also, rules dictated by the government, right?
The problem is uniformities. There are uniformities, and what is, when you talk about government, that is was something that I was trying to explain. There are very different approach. For instance, there is people that are doing things great. State of Wyoming. And you say, the state of Wyoming, I don't know, like, state of Wyoming is spectacular. It's the only law that actually makes sense. If you want to understand cryptocurrencies, read a statute from Wyoming. It is like, when I read it the first time, like a couple of years ago, I'm like, I can't believe it, somebody was that smart, and it's spectacular. And then you have, instead, the situation in other states where there are actually gaps in the law, that are the cryptocurrency are unregulated or just considered a gray area. That is, it's a storage of value. You perfectly know. Or you have places like in Georgia, where they practically, or Texas, where they come out with guidances, reinterpretate a particular statute, redefine elements like, what do you mean for transfer value, like monetary value? Or like they interpret a word in a certain kind of way, in a way that can fit where, like any kind of value, it's practically considered as money. However, they don't go as far. I'll tell you that it's a currency. Why? Because you have at the federal level, the SEC, that it says not all of those are assets. They are actually real currency if they are enough decentralized. Who determine who are they are enough decentralized? It's a case-by-case basis. So they practically tell you, do something, and then we're going to go after you. If we think, if we wake up that you are, we're going to take you to court, and then you can fight it in court. You know, we are talking about a financial space. That's really not a good way to run a business.
You're saying that they're just waiting and seeing how people are going to use it for criminals.
Yes.
And then once they detect it, they'll use that to regulate.
Listen, it's the IRS, that's not the IRS, the Treasury Department. The Treasury Department came out with the first guidance related to CVC, like the convertible virtual currency, that is like the technical word to call crypto. Convertible virtual currency is how the Treasury Department calls those, particularly Bitcoin and Ethereum. They came out with the first guidances in 2013. You know, that's 8 years ago. So for them, it's not something new. There are actually guidances. It's not that when they tell you, oh, but the space is unregulated. No, it's very well regulated at the federal and at the state level. It depends, like what kind of area they cover, you know.
You mentioned that the future is not about the storage of value, but about everything else that's going to happen on blockchain. What do you see? What are your startups doing? What's coming?
As I said, it depends what you like. You know, personally, I'm not a big fan of cryptocurrency. And I admit my ignorance in the space of cryptocurrency or CBC. Because that's not something that excites me. It's kind of boring. Old stuff. It's like talking about US dollars and euro. That's not fun. Fun, it's the infrastructure. Think about it. I like to plan railways and trains and train stations. I don't really like deal with the passengers. For me, the cryptocurrency are the passengers of this infrastructure. What is greater than like thinking about building a huge railway that covers a whole country, you know, with beautiful trains, incredible services, the station that they're gonna be super efficient to deliver like the passengers to destination. Hyperloop. Think about the hyperloop of like what's more exciting than that? The passenger, it's okay.
What are those components? What do you see sticking first? Because I've seen a lot of products that they say are blockchain based, software, CRMs, contracts, smart contracts, etc. I don't see many really taking off at the consumer level. At the business level, I've seen, but not on the consumer level.
You are right, but I've seen it kind of a switch, like in the last, I would say, 2 years. There was like 2 years ago, everything was about tokenization. Everything was supposed to be tokenized. Mm-hmm. They wanted to tokenize everything. Tokenization is not really efficient. People realize that you don't really need to put the French fries on the blockchain. You know, that's not really a great idea. You don't need to create a token that represents something. You can just have something that is recorded on the blockchain. Let's get back to the same concept. What's DLTs? What are the DLTs? It's an Excel spreadsheet. It's a ledger. It's just a ledger where you record something. That's why some of my clients, they are in the gold space. And in the gold space, they do not even tell you practically that is everything is recorded on a blockchain. They tell you that they have a very safe, immutable, and something that is very resilient in case of disastrous events. So people nowadays doesn't really. I saw a shift towards not really communicate too much. Because
don't talk too much about blockchain, because at the end it makes them worry.
It make backfire. Because, for instance, it happened to me 3 years ago. I had to spend for a client. I had spent almost a year fighting with the SEC. Fighting with the SEC on something that one is law. This is it's a security. And he says, no, it's not a security. Oh, yes, but you are using blockchain, so it's a security. No, it's not. The blockchain is only used to record the ownership, the timestamp, and each single transaction. Why? Because it's very safe and efficient. Took me 9 months, 10 months. Going back and forth with the SEC, at the end they gave up. I don't know, probably they couldn't stand my Italian accent anymore. I'm calling it all the time. I don't know. I was calling New York every other day. And because the whole point didn't make sense. I was trying to tell them, listen, you're narrowly focused on cryptocurrency and tokenization to fund a business. Here, we don't use that. That's not an investment device. So why should we record something that is not a contract or an investment? It's just the record of a transaction. You're just recording a transaction. That's it. There is where I see most future in this space. Yes, tokenization will always work. Also, we are seeing a lot of central banks that they are moving in that direction, and particularly in China, for sure. In China, they already issued their own wallet. That's why in China, there is, you know why the price of Bitcoin dropped so dramatically? Because it was a hash rate kind of issue. Also because China practically shut down all their miners. There were probably 50% of all the mining rigs were in China. Why? Because that's how China does. China issued their own wallet, their own blockchain. And they don't want a competition in their space because it's a communist country. That's the whole logic underneath of being a communist country. They don't want competition. So a lot of countries, they are moving towards this direction to actually replace, but that will be centralized, not decentralized. The only thing, they're going to use the blockchain for the recording, to record the transaction. So as I said, we will see it different, the same technology going split and going different direction. We don't know which one will be more successful. For the moment, I just enjoy the projects. I like to hear new projects.
So to close, I would like to ask you one of these questions that is a little off topic, but I'd like to close with it. If you could have a billboard with anything on it, what would it say and why?
Slow down, hurry up.
I love it.
Because we have a situation where we have somebody is going running too fast, and some other people instead has to catch up. And this is like a call to certain, as I said, we have certain kind of regulator, states, environment, certain kind, even financial institution, investor, blah, blah, blah. Oh, there is a part of the world that is really has issue to catching up. And you have instead certain kind of people that are super visionary and they are too far ahead. They have to understand that the only way for this new world to work is if we just if this momentum is like a, if the momentum has enough mass. You need a critical mass.
You need more people on the bus.
You need more people on board. That's the whole thing. You need more people on board to move it. And when I say on board, I mean at various levels. And a lot of more harmonization. What is very difficult is operate in a space that is not harmonic. If you think about, if you are a crypto exchange, and you use it, there are crypto exchanges all over the place, and you want to operate in one state, you need a license. You have to license yourself in each single state. You have to become a financial institution in each single state. That's what I do. I do the deployment of the license nationwide. It takes you sometimes 2 years to do this, 2 years. Because a license, sometimes it takes you easily, it takes you in between 6 months to 1 year to get, it's a financial institution. So imagine you have this patchwork with different law for something that it was designed by design, it's worldwide. Because this is the biggest difference. Like when you were talking about governments, trusting the governments and trusting the community, what is the difference in between Bitcoin and a currency, a governmental currency? That one is based on the trust on one government. And that government, yes, could be the US, but it also could be Venezuela. Yeah, you know, you know, you see the difference in the valuation of the currency. Instead, when you have Bitcoin and you have a cryptocurrency, this is worldwide. The community is worldwide. It's everywhere. Yeah, that's why when they say, oh,
they're not responding like that, for sure. With that, in every state, which doesn't make sense if you're an online business. But yeah,
think about how can you harmonize that. And the problem is they tried, like recently they tried, the Office of the Controller of the Currency came out and like, let's charter certain kind of trust for cryptocurrency at the federal level so that they could operate everywhere. What happened? States, they start suing the OCC. Why? Because at the state level, we are better to protect our consumers than you. They say, no, you want a slice of the cake. You know, you have the cake, you want a little slice. And say, you want those fees that, like for so that you can operate your state banking department. So that's sad, but that's currently the situation. And it's like there is that's why I said we need harmonization. We need this to become harmonic. So we need certain people to kind of slow down a little bit. Don't go the gray, you know, there are 50 shades of grays. And like, yeah, particularly in compliance. In compliance, I always say it's like 50 shades of gray. You know, it's this perfect balance in between pleasure and pain. That's compliance. And
I love that one. I'm going to use it. Yeah,
it's a compliance thing. Yeah. You have to operate. You really have to. You need at least 25 years of experience in compliance to come out with something like that. So that is certain people is going a little bit into the dark. It's getting black. And instead, on the other side, we really need the people that can make it like the gray, they can make it white. Mm-hmm. That they need to move in that direction. And we need this, the community to move in the same direction. That is like, as I said, how I see, and I'm in the middle.
Yeah.
Painting.
Painting.
I'm in the middle of painting. the various Yeah, I never. This is the first time I'm seeing myself as a painter.
Yeah. At least, you know, to make it full circle, at least we're in Miami. It's a sunny day almost every day. So you're painting gray, but you have the sun, right? To make it full.
Exactly. Exactly.
Because so much fun. Thank you so much for your time. This was amazing.
It's been my pleasure. Anytime, any kind of conversation you want to have on the subject, I'll be delighted.
No.